fooling around. I think as everyone here knows, and I think almost everyone too on the Zoom, we're doing a series of talks based on a text written by Dogen Zenji, the Japanese priest who way back in the 1200s brought this form of practice from China to Japan and established it in Japan. The essay that we're talking about is called Continuous Practice, or Gyoji. Now, I'm not going to say more about that. There's talks online that you can listen to if you've missed them and want to know a little bit more. And there's also the article itself is posted on the Mountain Rain website. But I was thinking as I started to write this, continuous practice with no goal, no end in sight. I imagine this does not have much appeal. It's like you're going to be doing your guitar chords forever. No end in sight. It really, continuous practice goes against our habitual view of getting the job done and moving on to something else. I remember in my own practice of calligraphy, you start with doing very basic kind of block-like, not quite sure how to describe them, but basic block-like, almost like printing, say, before you move on to writing, which is kind of a little more flowing, and which is I was very interested in. I wasn't interested in continuous practice of doing the block characters. But in Dogen's view, continuous practice is really the full expression of life itself and the compassionate way that we, you, tend our life is through a continuous practice. So in this way, I think continuous practice is like tending a garden. And although we, of course, enjoy the fruits of the garden, the vegetables, the flowers, berries, herbs. Really, the act of gardening itself has no end. And if you ask any gardener, they will tell you that, gardening does have no end. Even in winter, there are things to take care of. And the activities of gardening, of course, change according to the seasons. At times, requiring a lot of thought, a lot of energy, much time, and at other times there's more space to really deeply appreciate the fullness of early labors. And as the seasons pass, the gardener remains attentive to what demands come forward. I think continuous practice is like this. We must cultivate the understanding that continuous practice is not a burden. It is the ever deepening expression of one's life. I was trying to think how many years I have done Zazen, and I can't remember. It has been a little bit on again, off again, as I think it is for most practitioners. But I've been practicing for a long time. And I realize I will not stop until my last breath. And I hope, my deep hope, is that my last breath will be an expression of my Zazen practice. An expression of my life. Many of us come to practice because we question our view of conventional reality and our automatic conditioned responses to it. So at some point, I think we realize our habitual distractions are just distractions. They're not going to give us any kind of ongoing relief. And so then we feel the call to seek something more authentic. There has to be something more authentic than whatever our distractions are. The TV, serial relationships, buying a new house, getting another job, another partner, on and on and on. There has to be something more authentic. And although we may not be able to articulate it well, something draws us to look behind the curtain, to see behind our kind of self-narrative and our self-views that create, for most of us, the very context of our life, the play in which we are the main character. Do you ever feel that way? The world kind of goes around you, like you're center stage. We find ourselves really in an odd position. We are both sick of this self-creating narrative and at the same time afraid of losing it. Because what would be left without this narrative of Michael? Finding our way to a zendo, this place, for example, and engaging in zazen can be the beginning of something more authentic. And over the weeks or months, our interest and our commitment to the practice will grow. The benefits become clear and confidence begins to develop. We may notice, how I am living my life right now seems truer. There's some clarity here. Maybe we participate in a few longer retreats and session, residential retreats. And our enthusiasm for the practice is pretty strong. However, how long this enthusiasm continues is really different for each individual. There are times in our practice when the enthusiasm wears off. We become aware of our many deficiencies, our personal deficiencies, and sometimes the suffering of the world seems too much, and we fall into despair or sadness of some kind. It is common that as practice deepens, sadness and pain over personal faults or maybe the state of the world can arise and persist for quite a lengthy period of time. And this is not just a one-time occurrence. In my own experience, these dark periods cycle back, not quite the same as they were earlier, but as Mara, the mythical tempter in the Buddhist stories, as Mara is reappearing throughout Buddha's life, despair and sadness can reappear through the years of our practice as well. And this happens, I think, because those parts of our heart and our conditioning that we have for so long denied and avoided float up into our awareness. And we are called to bear witness, to bear clear witness to our shadow, because that too is part of our makeup. And during these times, it may seem that we're getting worse, not better. But that's not true. It's only that we are seeing more of who we are. I guess I'm not painting a very positive view of what practice is going to do for us. But really, continuous practice is the bridge that carries us over to the other side when we're feeling despondent and discouraged. Continuous practice is how we begin to question the truth of the dark narrative that we hold inside of us, the truth of the shadow that is part of who we are. The heart's opening through practice does not end our self-criticism. It does, however, reveal the beauty and the connection with the world that we too are part of, that we are part of the endless web of interbeing. Continuous practice offers us an expanded perspective to keep our journey moving forward in a wise direction, though our thoughts and feelings may arise and try to push us in another. At the beginning of this essay, Gyoji, or Continuous Practice, Dogen writes this. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It forms the circle of the way and is never cut off. Between aspiration, practice, and enlightenment and nirvana, there's not a moment's gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is undivided, not forced by you or others. The power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. It means your practice affects the entire earth, the entire sky, in the 10 directions. Although not noticed by you or by others, it is so. Ordinarily, we consider practice as something that's kind of limited and deliberate, right? We practice in order to achieve something, like Sirsasana yoga position, the standing on the head, position, right? Or we practice so we can run in the BMO Vancouver Marathon. See people getting ready, practicing for that these days. But the practice that Dogen talks about forms, as he says, the circle of the way, without a moment's gap and undivided. The continuous practice confirms our place in the order of things, both past and present. Let me just read you a little bit more of what he writes in this opening statement. Because of this practice, there are the earth, the sun, the moon, the stars. Because of this practice, there are the great earth and open sky. Because of this practice, there are body, mind, and their environs. Because of this practice, there are the four great elements. Continuous practice is not necessarily something people in the world love, but it should be the true place of return for everyone. Well, what are we to make of this? Continuous practice is both something we do and an expression of our whole being. A being that includes the sun, the moon, the stars, the great earth, the open sky. I think sometimes we have intimations of this. Outside hiking, maybe at night looking at the starry sky, and that strong sense of me seems to fade in the background. And although we may not be able to explain it well, to articulate it clearly, somehow we sense an intimacy arising. Dogen says, this continuous practice is the true place of return for everyone. I think he's saying that in our continuous practice, we perceive a vast interconnection greater than our thoughts, complaints, and feelings. And when we do this, gratitude naturally arises. Gratitude is, I think, an expression of continuous practice. One of the stories that Dogen writes about in this continuous practice is about Huayca, the first student of Bodhidharma. I think I've mentioned before, this continuous practice is kind of like a series of stories, one after the other, that Dogen talks about. So anyway, this is this particular story about Huayca is a little bit of a bloody and graphic story in the Zen tradition. So I'm warning you a little bit here. But it reflects, I think, the violence that was present in Chinese culture at the time. Just before the establishment of the Tang Dynasty, and actually also during the Tang Dynasty, there had been great uprisings and upheavals that had led to great death. But anyway, back to the story of Huayca. Bodhidharma had just come from India and was practicing in China, but he was just meditating. He refused to teach. But one Chinese monk, Huayca, desperately wanted to become Bodhidharma's student. And Bodhidharma kept refusing until one snowy day, Huayca, standing in the snow, cut off his arm to demonstrate his determination. And Bodhidharma then accepted Huayca as a student, and Huayca became eventually the second founder of the Zen school in China. Now, scholars needlessly, I think, point out that this story is not literally true. But it is a story that was created to show great resolve. And Dogen writes about gratitude for Huayca's life and for Huayca's determination. These are Dogen words again. Reflecting quietly, we know that even if Bodhidharma had come from India 1,000 times, without the continuous practice of Huayca, there would not be a great number of students and practitioners today. Now, as we see and hear the true Dharma, we should express our gratitude to Huayca. Most ways of expressing gratitude may miss the mark. And Dogen goes on to explain the usual ways of expressing gratitude, like giving great gifts, etc. They're not appropriate. That's not the way to express gratitude to Huayca. And Huayca, of course, kind of standing in for all the ancestors and teachers that have come before. Offering incense, bowing, chanting their names. Yeah. Dogen says no. Not appropriate. They miss the mark. He writes, continuous practice, day after day, is the most appropriate way to express gratitude. This means that you practice continuously without wasting a single day of your life, without using it for your own sake. Why is this so? Your life is a fortunate outcome of continuous practice from the past. You should express your gratitude immediately. So Dogen asks us to show gratitude to those who's practiced, those who practiced the way before us and taught the next generation. Do this by not wasting time, without using life for one's own sake. I think in that last statement, he's cautioning us to see and question our self-centered orientation. If we don't do continuous practice for ourselves, our own well-being, our own pleasure and comfort, I think we need to ask, who do I practice for? Who do I practice for? I would speculate that most of us here, both in the cloud and in this room, come to practice first for ourselves, our own turbulent heart needs some settling. And that will happen. And Dogen, though, is saying, there's more. There's more. Go beyond your self-centered orientation. Who do you practice for? A little bit later in the same essay, Dogen reminds us how each of us has come to hear the Dharma. He writes, your ability to see Buddhas and hear Dharma right now is the result of compassionate, continuous practice of each Buddha ancestor. Without one-to-one transmission of Buddha ancestors, how could the Dharma have reached us today? How could you not repay it with gratitude? Our culture celebrates individual accomplishment and pays lip service to the many who contributed to that accomplishment. You know, when we think about it, even our most simple tasks, our most simple achievements, in all of those we have received wide support beyond which we can recognize. Who taught you how to use a knife and fork? Who taught you how to use chopsticks? How to cook a meal? How to play a musical instrument? How to write your name? How to read? And who taught them? And who taught them? Our accomplishments, a great and small, rest on the care and work of countless others stretching back beyond our imagination. Regarding the teachings of the Buddha, Dogen wrote this, thoughtful people in the world express gratitude for receiving gold, silver, or rare treasures. Right? You get your paycheck? Thank you. They also express gratitude for receiving kind words. Who can forget the great gift of seeing and hearing the Tathagata's unsurpassable true Dharma, the Buddha's unsurpassable true Dharma. Being aware of this is itself a rare treasure of a lifetime. So the gratitude that Dogen is writing about is an expression of continuous practice. It is a profound sense of appreciation that encourages us to step away, step beyond our self-centered preoccupation. We seldom, I think, fully experience true gratitude. But when we do, it connects us to that which is much bigger than ourselves. It is a place of space and silence that allows the world in, exactly as it is. And in that place of gratitude, we're happy. Happy because we are at home in the fullness of our being. A true gratitude is intimacy. Many of you already know this story, so I won't go on about it. When I was a young man of 19, I went to Japan to study Aikido. And I lived there ultimately for a number of years, but to study Aikido, my first year, I was there living with my teacher, who did not accept any payment. Although I lived with him and his wife, they fed me, clothed me, took me to coffee shops, and taught me Aikido, kind of 24/7. It was exhausting in some ways, wonderful in others. At some point, and I don't remember when really, after I had come back from Japan and was busy with my studies at UBC and things, I reflected on the gratitude that I felt when I thought of him in my time that first year in Japan. And after a while, I realized this gratitude has no end. And in many ways in my life, I have tried to pay it forward. I don't keep an account. Have I reached the same amount that I received? But even now, I can feel a deep sense of gratitude for what he, and of course his wife and others, offered me at that time. A kind of intimacy, a space. Ed Dogen says, remember the ancestors as well. Those people who from the time of the Buddha forward have passed on these teachings. That too is part of continuous practice. I'll stop there. Thank you so much for listening. And as is customary on our Wednesday evenings, we're going to get into groups to have reflect on a couple of questions with each other. So the questions are this. I'll give you a couple to think about. You don't have to, and you won't answer both of them or all of them. But first of all, is there someone who has inspired you in your life, in your practice? To whom, or to what? Let me see. And to whom you would express gratitude? Is there someone in your life who has inspired you? Perhaps in your practice, but not necessarily. But to whom you would like to express gratitude. And connected to that, you may also think about how do you express gratitude? How do you express gratitude in your life? How would you like to express gratitude? Maybe you're not doing it right. Maybe there's other things you really would like to do. How would you express gratitude? Okay, I think that's pretty good. So, or you can talk about anything maybe you heard in the talk. We're going to now divide up the, how many people are there?
16.
16?
16. 15, 14.
We're dropping down. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Good. Let's have two groups of eight. I think that'll be good. And then each person will get roughly a minute and a half to 2 minutes to talk about. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4. Perfect. So let's study from David, this group here. Would you go to the kitchen and just, David, you've run the group before, so just please, someone could kind of look at your watch, keep time, and just signal if when someone gets close to the 2 minute mark so that we can all end. And same here. Good. And again, just say names. There's no crosstalk. Just speak from your heart.